weekly pulse on all things green and gold with the three-time Wisconsin sports writer of the year, Jason Wilde. I'm Alex Stroph with you here on the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube page and 1430 ESPN. Beaver Dam, our last Thursday for a couple of weeks because the Packers play on Thursday the next 2 weeks following this weekend's game against San Francisco. So we are going to record and release our episodes on Wednesdays the next 2 weeks leading up to Detroit and Miami on Thanksgiving. Hi, Jason. How are you?
God, this is just like when I do a show with Tausch and we plan the show on the air. It's great. I feel right at home.
You should, because we are going to plan the show on the air. No, I do have some ideas of the direction I want to go today.
You already, unlike him, you already told me we were going to record on Wednesday. So it does not that did not happen organically right there. Oh, hey, we played on Thursday. Maybe we should record on Wednesday. That's how we operate.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You guys are the best, though. So let's start here. Narrowly escaping that win over Chicago. A blocked field goal by Carl Brooks gives the Packers a 20-19 win. They advance to 7-3 on the year. My proclamation of 0% was really not looking good there at the end of the game, but thankfully Carl Brooks's middle finger saves my proclamation of 0%. The Packers advance to 7-3. Divisional games are always tough. They're always played, you know, very closely, no matter the division, it seems. That division games are just a little bit closer than normal games, because going into that one, it felt like that should probably be a game the Packers win big if they are the team we think they are. I'm just curious now, a couple days removed, Jason, what do you make of the 2024 Green Bay Packers, now 7-3 after that win in Chicago?
Yeah, sometimes you have to win that way. Right. And while Homer was apologizing for winning, the Packers shouldn't. Like, look, can we give the Bears some credit? Like, I know, you know, the Bears still suck. The Bears still suck. Everybody likes that song except me. But they didn't suck. Right. They changed their offensive coordinator. Thomas Brown comes in and is way smarter about his game plan than Shane Waldron had been. They're coming off a game against a bad Patriots team in which their quarterback was sacked 9 times, Ed Rooney. And so he says, look, we're going to get the ball. That's an old reference to Ferris Bueller. That's why you didn't get that. He says, look, we're not doing this. Okay? We're going to get the ball out of his hand quickly. We're going to have some designed runs. And we're going to find a different way to be productive offensively with our rookie quarterback, who's been getting the crap kicked out of him because our offensive line sucks and we don't want to ruin this guy because we think he's pretty damn good. And they did it. Now, they only had 19 points to show for it, so it's not like they were some sort of offensive juggernaut, but they did a lot of good things. I mean, you know, the fact that they came into the game 6 of 40 on third down in the previous 3 losses, and that they were 9 of 16 against the Packers. And not only that, but then on 3 of the 7 that they failed on, they went and picked it up on fourth down. So now you're talking about 12 conversions there. That's good football by them. Yes, is it also on the Packers' defense that they didn't stop them? Of course it is. Is that why the Bears had 37 minutes of time of possession and the Packers had 23? Of course it is. But they do get paid, and they do have talented players. And so, you know, is it the kind of game that you would not want to lose? Absolutely. I mean, that would have been, in my opinion, pretty devastating. Like, because then suddenly all your players are questioning themselves, and your coaches are, and they're like, are we not who we thought we were? What are we doing wrong here? How do we lose to these yahoos, right? And so I think it was a really good win from that perspective, that you could play like Garbanzo defensively and still find a way just by the tip of the chinny chin chin slash middle finger of Carl Brooks. So, look, is it one that you're going to hang in the Louvre? Of course not. But you found a way. You're 7-3. You're well positioned to be a wild card. I don't think they're going to catch the Lions. Maybe they do if they win on December 5th in Detroit, but probably not. And so you got the win you needed, and now you're going up against the team that you could administer Well, I wouldn't say a Jake Paul, Mike Tyson punch because I don't know what to make of that. But a pretty good haymaker on a team that has a tough schedule ahead and that has knocked your tail out of the playoffs three of the last 5 years.
Your culturally relevant analogy there. It made me laugh. I don't know that it fits, but it was well done by you. Yeah, I mean, you never apologize for winning, especially when it's 11 straight against your rival Bears. But it wasn't clean. But a win is a win, and you're 7-3 moving on to San Francisco. So that is good news. Jordan Love seems the healthiest he's been since week one against the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously had the one interception, but it was a little bit different than some of the interceptions we've seen him throw this year. Though some of the interceptions we've seen him throw, bad decisions. That throw against Chicago wasn't a bad decision. It was bad execution. He had a wide open receiver. He just overthrew him, and luckily it wasn't in the opposite red zone, which is he's done a few times this year. All in all, though, I thought Love played pretty well Sunday against the Bears. What did you make of his performance coming off of the bye?
Aside from winning the game, the most important thing that happened on Sunday was that Jordan Love looked like Jordan Love. Like, I feel like that's almost, and you know, I did my part because yesterday when we talked to Jordan in the locker room, I peppered him with multiple questions about this because I think it was enormous because he looked like Jordan Love again. And he had not looked like him since Brazil. Like, even in the games he played after he missed the two games with the knee and when he played against Detroit. And I'm not talking just about his decision making. But his decision-making was better, too. He also looked like Jordan Love in that category. But, like, as you said, he overthrows Tucker Kraft. That is not – I mean, that's not a fluke. That's just – that's a bad throw. Like, let's call it what it was. He sailed the ball. But it wasn't the wrong decision. Now, was the one throw into double coverage to Christian Watson for the 48-yard gain a bad decision? Probably, right? He had Tucker Kraft open underneath that, and he would have still had an explosive gain had he just thrown it to an open Tucker Kraft. But, hey, Christian Watson goes up and gets it. It's a huge play. They end up squandering it because they go for it on fourth down, and they don't make it. But my point is that he moved like Jordan Love normally does. He threw the football. Like, to me, the biggest thing, and I asked Jordan about this, and he kind of downplayed it, but look, I'm not Matt LaFleur and I'm not Doc McKenzie, but to me, it looked to me like when he was throwing the football, this is me. I'm doing my catcher imitation, throwing down to second base, like in my Wilson Park Little League youth. But he stepped into his throws more authoritatively. He looked confident that I could step into it with my left foot and I'm not going to have my left knee or my left groin get injured again. Like, he felt that good. The run that he makes, right? He had a great line yesterday, the one where he gets hit at the pylon. You know, I said, is that a run you even consider making when you're dealing with the injuries? And he says, you know, to be honest, I probably do try it. I don't know how fast I get there or how far I get, but I'm just playing at that point. But to me, that underscores how different of a player he was, that he almost gets in. And he lowers his left shoulder and hits the pylon. Like, he just, if you're a Packers fan, to me, that was the most encouraging thing to come out of Chicago.
Yeah, it was encouraging. I'm totally with you on that. And you know, hopefully that continues because the Packers need Jordan Love to look like Jordan Love if they want to reach their goals. But at 7-3, obviously in a good position to at least get in the postseason as a wild card. The offensive breakdown, I don't know how much we can take away from this considering they only ran 43 offensive snaps. But Jordan Love threw the ball 17 times. Josh Jacobs carried the ball 18 times. I felt as if that was a pretty good breakdown for this offense. It shows how important Josh Jacobs has been and how vital he's been to the identity of this Packers offense in 2024. And I don't want to say Jordan Love on the quote-unquote Malik Willis plan, but only asked to throw the ball 17 times in this game. What did you make of the breakdown and some of the play calling for Matt LaFleur?
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, first of all, I think 6 of his 13 completions, if the math is right, we're to running backs, 4 to Josh Jacobs and 2 to Chris Brooks.
Yep.
That tells me he's taking checkdowns, which is another thing he wasn't doing right? The effort Watson's down there somewhere throws, not as many. Still threw one, but not as many. And to me, you know, and it's like anything that you do in life. If you do something and it is successful, you're more likely to do it again. And so he had some checkdowns that were really productive, right? I mean, the one throw that he throws, kind of he rainbows it to Jacobs, and he gets, I can't remember, 13 yards or something like that. Hey, I can check it down. I don't have to play hero ball, and I can get 13 yards and get a first down and get a fresh set of downs. The problem is when you run, I think it was 43 actual plays, and then they had three plays that were like nullified by penalties. So you only take 46 snaps in a game. That's not enough offensively. McCarthy used to tell us, your goal is 70. Well, you came up 24 short of that goal. And so that's a lot. And again, that's on the defense, right? Mostly. Couldn't get a stop on third down, couldn't get off the grass. So to me, him using his checkdowns was huge. And to your point about Josh Jacobs, look, as good as I think Jordan Love is, he is still a second-year starter. I don't want them saying, okay, Jordan, go win the game for us, like they used to with Rodgers. I want them to say, okay, Jordan, we're going to give the ball to Josh Jacobs a bunch because he's a stud, and then we're going to need you to play to make 10, 12 plays in a game instead of 25 or 30. And to me, that's a winning formula for this team.
I 100% agree with you, and I think that's
well said.
I think that's why it worked out so well, despite it being very close and losing on a blocked field goal. You lose the time of possession battle by 13 minutes. You lose the turnover battle 1-0. You still win the game. I mean, typically when you lose those two categories, you're not going to win the game. And the Packers found a way on Sunday in Chicago, 20-19, over the Bears. Last thing from the Bears before we preview the 49ers. Jaire Alexander, really interesting situation that's been ongoing now for the last two seasons. He's active ahead of that game, plays a tiny bit, leaves the game with a knee injury, didn't practice Wednesday for the Packers. Rob Domofsky said this multiple times. I imagine you've said this multiple times. I know I've said it this week. It's very reminiscent of David Bakhtiari. He's a great player when he's on the field. He's taking up a starting spot, but seemingly the last year and 10 games now, you just can't rely on him. And that makes me wonder, is the Jaire Alexander experiment in Green Bay coming to an end after this season? I don't know if we can totally predict that, but here now 10 games in, it's certainly not ideal what's happening with their top corner, Jaire Alexander.
Yeah, and look, I've said this to some others. Like, I really want to talk to him because I don't, you know, I've obviously had colleagues that had no problem trashing guys without ever giving them a chance to speak on it. But I'm leery of this. Even if you heard me ask LaFleur the question on Monday, like, I'm not comfortable asking about guys playing through injury or their toughness or their commitment to the team, because Lord knows I'm not tough, first of all. But like, if you go through a pregame warm-up, a before the pregame warm-ups workout to determine whether a guy can play, and the medical staff, the coaching staff, and the player all agree, hey, all right, you're going to go on a limited snap basis. We're going to spell you, but we're trying to get you through the whole game. And then the player pulls the plug. Like, Matt LaFleur's quote on Monday was, he felt like he couldn't go, so we pulled him, which I loosely translate to, he took himself out of the game because he didn't feel like he could play. That is disconcerting, right? Like, and again, these are the reasons why I want to talk to him, is because he made a comment last year when he was dealing with all of his injuries, and he was also disgruntled, if we're being honest, about how he didn't feel like it was something to the effect, and I haven't had time to look it up yet, but it was something to the effect of, if I don't feel like I'm 100%, I don't think I can play because I'm not effective. Well, here's the problem. You've heard the cliche a million times from Bulaga, from Chewy, from Tausch. After week one, no one is ever 100% again. So if he requires being 100%, in order to play. Because remember, after the Jacksonville game, when he hobbled off, it was the final defensive play of the game for the Packers. It was Evan Engram's touchdown catch. When he hobbled off, Rob Domofsky reported subsequently that tests found no structural damage to his knee. So he didn't tear a ligament. He didn't, again, that's what Rob reported. So then why he wasn't able to go against Detroit, and then he pulled himself out of this game. So again, he deserves the benefit of the doubt. I am uncomfortable crushing him for that, but I know there are fans that are very frustrated. And he is now part of a laundry list of first round draft picks on defense since 2016. And look, I'm not going to kill Kenny Clark, because Kenny Clark's been a really good player for a really long time, but he has not had a productive season thus far. Playing in a 4-3 for the first time in his life, he has not been productive. Rashawn Gary has not been productive. Eric Stokes is not even playing. He played four snaps after Jair went out. So, but now Jair's on that list too, of a guy that you paid and you drafted in the first round, and he's not being able to help you. And this felt like a transformative season for him. New strength and conditioning staff, new coaching staff, new position coaches, etc. A new teammate in Xavier McKinney that we thought was going to bring out the best in him, and it had.
It had, yeah.
And now we're questioning it. Whether we should be or not, we are.
Yeah, the best of ability is availability, and unfortunately, Jair Alexander just hasn't been all that available in 2024. Hopefully, you know, when the season matters most, December, January, and maybe even into February, he's available.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not too optimistic as it stands on November 21st here as we chat. So we will see. Let's look ahead to the 49ers coming up Sunday, 3:25 at Lambeau Field. Packers, Niners. The Niners are 5-5 despite that stacked roster on paper. The record does not indicate that. Obviously, they've been dealing with a ton of injuries throughout the season, but they're mostly back to full health and still lost last week. So 5-5, the Niners are as they come into Green Bay. The Packers, as I mentioned, 7-3. Matt LaFleur, in his career as the head coach, is 2-4 against the 49ers, including numerous playoff losses to his longtime mentor and friend, Kyle Shanahan. I view this game as really important for the Packers for an array of reasons, that being one of them, right? You can not only get a win over the Niners, which Matt LaFleur has struggled to do, but effectively maybe be one of the nails in their coffin in terms of making the playoffs. At 5-6, their playoff chances would drop to 15%. If the Packers get to 8-3, their playoff chances 90%. So this is a huge game for Green Bay on Sunday, Jason, for a number of reasons. But I think most importantly, getting a win over Shanahan could be huge for LaFleur.
I didn't know you were such an analytics guy. Listen to you. DVOA, strophe. Look, it is. I don't know if it's the final nail, but it is certainly a nail, right? I mean, you know, Tausch put it as a potential knockout punch. I'm not sure if it's a knockout, but it definitely would stagger them.
Yeah, probably not a knockout, but I think it would be. I mean, six losses is, especially in the NFC, 11-6 should get you in, but 10-7 might not.
Right, and look at. I mean, look, they're not going to be a wild card team, I wouldn't think. So they have to win their division. Right now, they're one game behind the Cardinals. I don't think the Cardinals are any good. I know they've won four in a row or had won four in a row or whatever. But the bottom line is that they could be the team that gets into the playoffs because they win the bad division in the NFC at 9-8, right? So I'm not writing off a 49ers team ever, even if they lose to the Packers on Sunday. That said, you look at their schedule, they got a lot of tough games ahead, right? Next week they go to Buffalo. So this is a tough back-to-back for a West Coast team to go to Green Bay and then go to Buffalo in back-to-back weeks. To me, the biggest thing is that this is another one of those kind of measuring stick games where you could say, hey, we didn't play very well in Chicago against the clearly inferior team. You win this game and you're feeling pretty damn good about yourself. And then you beat Miami, a warm weather team. It's snowing today on Thanksgiving night at home. Now you're on a three-game winning streak again going into another Detroit matchup, just like you were going into the last Detroit matchup. So to me, you can build some real momentum. You get to 9-3, even if the Lions are sitting at 11-1 going into that. Now suddenly you win that game, you even the season series, like now you're really rolling. And there's no doubt that this team's goal is to do what it did last season in the second half of the season, right? Mm-hmm. You go 6-3 in the first nine, and then you go 6-2 like you did last year in the final eight, and 12-5. And even if that's not good enough to win the division, you feel really good about your playoff chances. You really like the way you're playing. So, look, I don't think this is an end-all, be-all for the Packers. I think it's close to an end-all, be-all for the 49ers, though. This is a really important game from their perspective, and I don't know. I don't feel super great about this one, frankly. If I'm a Packers fan, but if you can find a way to win, it would be huge.
Yeah, we had a caller into Kyle Bruston Nortman on ESPN Wisconsin yesterday say, like the Packers are the Bears owners, the 49ers are the Packers. And it worries them for that reason alone, just the recent history and how the 49ers have, you know, ended the season for the Packers several times, both under Matt LaFleur, but really in the last decade and a half, right, dating back to when Mike McCarthy was the head coach. Who do you think the better roster is as it stands right now, Niners or Packers?
You know, I think it's the Niners, although they do have Devondre Campbell, and I don't like Devondre Campbell at all. And he's playing poorly,
yep,
which is unfortunate.
Seem like you think it's that unfortunate, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, I might not have meant that. The point is that, like, look, they lost Greenlaw to that Achilles where he's coming off the sideline in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
that
so
sucks. Like,
yeah,
he's a really good player. And obviously Fred Warner, or as Tausch calls him, Varner, is a really good player. Like, they got a bunch of defensive talent, right? I don't know if Bosa is going to play or not. But if he plays, he obviously is a problem, even if he's not 100%. And you look at their offense, and even though they lost Brandon Ayuk for the season, they still got a bunch of talent over there too. So, you know, to me, the biggest question mark is their quarterback. Like, is Brock Purdy? I don't think it's fun to play with an injured throwing shoulder. So while he may be day to day and he may be ready to play on game day, he's not going to be 100%. But I just thought it was really interesting how the 49ers see this game, because on Wednesday, George Kittle came out. He didn't play last Sunday against Seattle, and he was, I do declare I am playing against the Packers. So that tells you what it means, not just to the Packers, but to the 49ers as well.
Yeah, George Kittle, born in Madison, Wisconsin. So maybe this one a little bit extra for him. You mentioned Brock Purdy dealing with that shoulder injury, likely going to play as he did last week, but hasn't been Mr. MVP, has Mr. Irrelevant like he was a year ago. 13 touchdowns, 8 interceptions on the year. And I feel like he's kind of the best argument, and I don't mean this as a knock, of environment really making you what you are, right? Like, we always trash Chicago, for crappy environment. Quarterbacks can't develop there. Purdy's a good quarterback. I don't know that he's a great quarterback. And he's been, I would just say, perfectly average this year, as the record indicates, at 5-5. So I think the Packers definitely have the quarterback advantage, but when it comes to maybe the rest of the roster, It probably leans San Francisco, but I think this is going to be a close game and an epic battle because as we just mentioned, it's a huge one for both of these teams. I don't think we're going to see a blowout either way on Sunday. I think it's going to be a very close, maybe even low scoring, kind of grinded out game between two essential rivals in the Niners and the Packers.
I haven't looked yet this week. What has Christian McCaffrey done since he's been back?
He hasn't been MVP McCaffrey, but he was good last week against Seattle, 19 carries, 79 yards.
And they still got Mason in their backfield too.
Yeah, but they didn't really utilize him a ton against Seattle. I mean, Seattle was right in that or winning as it went down to the wire. So Mason finished with only 2 carries last week.
Okay. I just find myself wondering how the Packers will fare against them in terms of stopping their run.
Yeah, do you think if you're Kyle Shanahan, is it just, hey, they've really struggled stopping the run? Is it just you use your two backs, slam it down their throat, and say, hey, stop it?
Yeah, I'm going to try to if I'm Shanahan, that's what I'm trying to do. And then look, again, if I've got a quarterback who's dealing with a shoulder injury, who doesn't have Brandon Ayuk, who has had Deebo Samuel dinged up all season, who has been in and out of the lineup with Kittle, that's definitely what I'm looking to do, right? And that doesn't mean I'm not going to throw the football, but if I believe that my defense can be effective, right? And look, if we're being honest, the first half of that playoff game, Jordan Love was better than their defense
was.
Oh,
yeah, definitely.
Is it going to be different this time around? New defensive coordinator as opposed to last year, too, by the way. It'll be interesting to see. But, yes, I'm trying to run the football. And on the flip side, you know, again, I'm not saying that I only want Jordan Love throwing 17 passes in a game. I definitely want him with more opportunities than that. But I'm giving the ball to Josh Jacobs, man. Like, you got Josh Jacobs. You know, again, I don't know if this weather is going to persist all the way to Sunday afternoon, but you got Josh Jacobs for this time of year, for a cold weather where guys are going to have to make a business decision on whether to tackle him or not. And so I want him getting the football. And then I want, you know, and LaFleur kind of downplayed it last week, but to me, the play action game and being under center makes this offense better. And so the more they're able to do that, the better off they'll be.
Who's been the best pass catcher through 10 games for the Packers offense?
Look, last week, Reed had, what, two catches?
Mm-hmm.
One of them a touchdown on a free play. I think Reed is their best receiver. There was a time, and again, I haven't talked to this guy in a couple weeks now. There was a time where I thought Romeo Dobbs was going to be the security blanket guy that when it was third down and you needed third and seven, you were going to throw an 8-yard route to him and he was going to pick it. I don't know where he's at now. He's still grabbing all of his stuff from his locker and going to get dressed elsewhere. So he doesn't have to talk to us.
Oh,
So I don't know where he's at kind of mentally. You know, the two games after he didn't show up for work, you know, he was productive. He had some big plays in both of those. And now he's he's with everybody else, right? He had two targets against the Bears. He caught one for 17. He had a drop on his first target. But again, there were only 17 throws. So I think it's Reed. But this is the reality of their offense. Like, Jaden Reed leads them in receptions, yards, targets, and he's tied for the most touchdown receptions among wide receivers. Him and Wicks both have four. Tucker Kraft's got five. But you're going to have games like this where that guy who's at the top of your statistical depth chart gets two catches. So I think he's their best player. I just think the best development that they had beyond what we talked about of Love looking like Love was that they got Christian Watson involved. I just think their offense is different when he is a legitimate threat and not just running down the field as a decoy.
No, you're totally right. And Sunday, obviously, against the Bears was a huge game for him. Four catches, 150, which is an average of, what, like 38 yards a catch? I mean, that's absurd. So really nicely done by Christian Watson. He played a huge game for them. Last thing for you, and I think I'm going to start asking you this every week, is what's your Sunday story in the State Journal going to be about?
About 49ers, Packers history and what I thought was really interesting, Jordan told us yesterday that he watched that game three times during the offseason. And then he kind of tried to say that he did that with all the games, but he clearly didn't. Like, you're not watching the week three game three times in the offseason. His point was it's the last game you had. Well, and I said, you weren't obsessing over it, right? He's like, well, no, but like these guys, you know, I own you. I still own you. Like, they could say that because they own all the games that matter. And so, to me, this is one of those matchups. And look, I don't want to delve into the Shanahan-LaFleur friendship, but I don't think it's the same as it was before Shanahan tried to steal his quarterback. So, I just, to me, that's really an interesting dynamic. So I kind of explore that and talk to a few more guys that have played in more games against these guys. Elgton Jenkins, especially, because he's, you know, he was on that 19 team. But to your point from earlier, like the 2012 game where Colin Kaepernick runs all over them, the 2013 game where my guy Micah Hyde has a chance to seal a win and has an interception go through his hands, and he beat himself up, and the 49ers go down and win that game too. Like, there's a lot of history here where when you were a little tyke or not even born yet, you know, the Packers were winning huge playoff games against these guys. 95 when the 49ers were the reigning champs, 96 on their way to the Super Bowl, 97 on the road at Candlestick to go to the Super Bowl again. Like, those are, you know, and then that's why in 98 when T.O. had the catch two, it was such a big deal for 49ers fans because the Packers were the ones that were ending their season every year.
Yeah, that's it dates way back, man. And this is a big one on Sunday for both teams. So I'm really excited for this one. I'm a little bit more nervous than my 0% proclamation last week. I'll just put it that way. Packers Niners 325 at Lambeau Field on Sunday. Green Bay game day gets going at 12 o'clock. The Jason Wilde hour, 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock on Sunday on Green Bay game day live outside of Lambeau Field as we break everything down. You can get Jason on socials, Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, at Jason J. Wilde. You can get me at Alex_Stroke. Jason, appreciate the time as always. Looking forward to chat with you more on Sunday.
And then I'll talk to you on Wednesday next week as we get ready for Thanksgiving Packers Dolphins action.
Are you excited to hang out with me on Thanksgiving?
Oh yeah, I'm hanging out with you on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, well, for Green Bay game day. We're not like having Thanksgiving dinner together.
Yeah, I guess
we could.
Are you bringing food?
Should I?
Is Saz's catering just for you and I?
They are not, as far as I'm aware. So maybe I'll stop at a local grocery store that really exists primarily in Northeast Wisconsin, because I know they'll have like rotisserie chickens or something. Maybe I'll bring you something. Yeah, I can do that.
We can plan the menu on the air the next time we
talk. All right, we'll talk to you next Wednesday on Weekly Wilde. It's Jason Wilde. I'm Alex Drove. See ya.